hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, wussies, geeks, dorks, nerds, freaks, douchebags, dirtbags, teabags. Good morning to all of you guys and girls who have been called names your entire life for whatever reason, because this is no name calling week, and I just wanted to open our show with a little name calling, Mark Riley.
Don't blame me.
I'm not blaming anybody.
I just work here.
No, I'm not blaming anybody. No Name Calling Week initiative started on Monday. The program, now in its second year, has the backing of groups from the Girl Scouts to Amnesty International, but has also drawn complaints that it overemphasized harassment of gay youth. So the initiative was developed by the New York-based Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, which seeks to ensure that schools safely accommodate students of all sexual orientations. You know, I got an email. Yeah, I'm weird with this because I guess I live in an environment, you know, when I've done comedy for 20 years, you know, and comics will talk about anything. They'll call anybody names, you know, not to the audience, but to each other. You know, we're very crass, you know, people, mm-hmm. and there's very few boundaries to which we obey. You know, there are no restrictions to our conversations. You know, even with my wife, who's a comic, you know, I can't talk like I talk with my wife here on the air. Not just
why not, Mark?
Well, not just because of profanity reasons, but because, you know, we talk about things in a way that's dirty, it's crass. We
gross.
Talk like sailors. It may be gross.
Yeah.
And, you know, we call each other names, you know, but whatever. You know, I get this. We were talking yesterday, and this was not. We got two emails. There was a guy yesterday who wrote that he was very offended that, you know, we were using the word faggot in a way, you know, in relation to this story. You know, I was trying to provoke Kalo to call me one, and he wouldn't do it. And then we were throwing the word around, and he got offended to the point where he wrote an email that basically said, "You have no idea, you know, what this word, you know, means to gay people, or what this word, you're completely insensitive to it if you're going to use it at all." Mm-hmm. So I imagine that he's putting it in the same, you know, context as black people may put the N-word, you know, and I don't know, you know, to me, if all the names were demystified, you know, obviously the N-word has never been demystified and it's not going to be. But, you know, and the truth of the matter is like with words like faggot, it's an awful word, but some people, you know, just use it generally, mm-hmm. you know, and in terms of like, you know, like douchebag and wuss. Here's the other email, wuss, right? "Hey, Maren, I don't mean to get all women's studies on your ass, but I have to. Reed, calling some guy a wuss for being weak and flaky, etc. Sigh. Here's your lesson for today. It's a mean, offensive, degrading thing to say, but it's wrong in more ways than one. It's a term men use to project their own fear of women. The sheer strength of that part of a woman's body made your life possible. If it was weak, like you guys like to say when you're saying a guy wussed out, well, we'd still be primordial ooze. Class dismissed, your loyal listener." Unquote.
Wow.
Now, the deal is like, is that when I call Chris Kalo a wuss, or he calls me a wuss, I, you know, the last thing I'm thinking about is the vagina, really. To be honest with you.
Call you a wuss?
It doesn't matter.
Kalo, did you ever call him a wuss?
It doesn't matter. Go ahead, Kalo.
No, I didn't.
Just checking.
Well, he's just being a wuss. Right, but what I'm saying is
I called him something much worse.
Much worse.
Worse, yes, that's true.
But the thing is like, is it that heavy, Riley? I mean, is it like, you know, are these names really that loaded? I mean, when I use it, it's almost like, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes you use a name like, what's going on? You know, how's it going?
Yeah,
wuss? You know, don't be a wuss. Let's go. You know, I don't see. I guess it has to do with framing as well. That, you know, these things, you know, no matter what I say, no matter how candid I am or how comfortable it may be to say the word, does not take away the histrionics of the word.
Well, see, I thought that wuss was actually putting together two other words.
It is wimp and the other word.
Yeah, and the other word.
Yeah, it's like a real kind of like a.
And then it was shortened.
Hybrid.
Yeah, it's a hybrid, and it's a shortened hybrid because most people drop the C.
Right.
You know.
But the only thing with me is that, like, you know, wuss to me it just represents high school. I don't think of it as, like, you know, being, you know, offensive in any way, you know, because I wouldn't use the word, you know, I may use it for subtle bullying, but I very rarely use, you know, slang words with real anger.
Look, there are, in the lexicon of the English language, there are always going to be words that are going to offend. I'll give you a classic example of something. Mm-hmm. The term "hey baby" when addressed from a man to a man. Now, in the black community, when I was growing up, that was no big deal.
Right.
You know, "hey, baby, what's going on?"
Right.
But under certain circumstances, if a man addresses a man as "Hey, baby," the man might take offense because he may feel that he's being feminized in
right.
some small. Not that there's anything wrong with being a woman, mind you, but that's how some people react to what is under normal circumstances. Certainly, in my experience, to be just a very neutral kind of term, like, "Hey, how you doing?"
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So there's always, you know, the nuance of language is something that you can always find somebody who might be offended by virtually any slang term in the English language.
But you know what's interesting to me about this, I guess, is that she's not concerned with the victim of the name called. She's not concerned with the person who's called the name. She's, you know, and I'm not, I think this is a nice letter, and she's not doing this, you know, she's not writing me this in anger. But when I say wuss, if I call Kalo a wuss, she doesn't care about Kalo. She cares about the reputation of the vagina. That is what's going on here. Is that like
story of my life, man?
Is that like you are soiling the reputation of the strength and power of the vagina?
Hmm.
You know, it's not like.
Well, I wouldn't argue with it. I guess it's about self-definition. You know, look, I go to the health.
But what about poor Kalo?
I see those people exercising and things. You know, wait.
What about poor Kalo who's sitting there going, "I'm a wuss"? She doesn't care about him.
No, Kalo doesn't sit there and say, "Am I a wuss?" You know better than that. Not him.
But that's what this
maybe
is.
Maybe other people, yeah.
But I'm alone. But this I kind of...
Yeah. Oh. When you're alone eating your noodles by yourself.
Oh, here we go with the noodles. We're going to get an email from somebody who says the whole discussion of noodles is offensive.
With your sad cup of noodles, just sitting there ruminating about going to Costco and wondering if wusses go to Costco.
No, man. Look.
I get lonely.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
As you get older, and you're going to know this pretty soon, man. Yeah. As you get older, you do things as an older person that you used to laugh at people for doing when you were younger. Believe me when I tell you.
Is this building up to something?
It's building up to your middle age.
Yeah, really?
But yeah, like, man.
What are you thinking about?
Well, I'm thinking about, going through... Well, see, you probably already do this, but, you know, going through shopping circulars and stuff like... I used to laugh at people that did that.
It's fun. It's fun to find deals.
I know it's fun to find deals now. It wasn't fun to find deals when I was 30. I used to think people that did that had too much time
care.
On their hands.
To spend some money.
You
know,
yeah.
Dude, yesterday... Hey, no, here, let me just finish this real quick about what's... Is that, like, I really... am very careful not to call people that I don't know certain names. Like, you're talking about the word baby, the word sweetheart, the word dame, chick, broad,
yes.
All those things. Yeah, they're not words I would use, but sometimes, depending, if you don't know the person, if you don't have a candid relationship with them, and you use a word that you would use with somebody that you do have an intimate relationship, there's a very good chance that you might offend them for whatever reason.
Absolutely.
So basically, if you're using these words and you don't know the person, don't use the words until you're comfortable. You got to break the ice. You sort of got to break the wuss barrier before you can call your brother.
So have you broken the ice with our listeners now?
Well, no, not really. I mean, I'm sure people will complain. And and be honest with you, I understand the guys. What the gentleman who wrote about the word faggot. I understand that is a heinous word. It does really hurt people, and it's a very insensitive word. But the bottom line is, it did become sort of part of the slang colloquial habits. Of people who talk to each other. They're buddies like that. Don't be a faggot, don't be this or that. And, are you going to stop that? Is there something wrong with that among friends on some level? Probably not. But, I mean, the fact that the word exists and it does hurt people, that's a reality.
It is definitely a reality.
You just have to be careful not to hurt people's feelings. But I don't like censoring the language completely. If you're among, the people that can take it, then use it. But as far as looking for deals, dude, I went to Dwayne Reed yesterday to buy a few things. Almost like, and I tried to make all my shopping in one trip, almost turned around and hit myself because I didn't have my stupid little Dwayne Reed card, where you get to like the 2% off. Like, I'm sitting there, I got a bunch of bags, I got one more stop at the drugstore, and I'm like, oh, God.
Russ, you know what? I have a ShopRite card, right? And you go into the supermarket, and when you start out, if they don't hit the card when you first start the order, everything comes out at list price.
Right.
So last time I went in, the woman had started scanning the stuff, and then I handed her the card. And it's like Vegas, man.
Oh, yeah.
$2.50 off, $1.50 off, $6.50 off.
You got to get cards for everywhere now, though. That's
yeah.
The whole deal. So when we come back, we're going to talk about how George Bush is personally trying to exploit the fact that black people die earlier than white people for his own good. We'll be back after this. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, courtesy of Air America Radio.
20 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. A couple of things going on out there in the world. If you want to oppose the anti-gay rights amendment and the elimination of the filibuster, go to the links page at morningsedition.com. We've got a couple of petitions there. And also, speaking of, you know, bad names, name calling, you can join the Morning Sedition Book Club and purchase Sam Lipsyte's Homeland by going to morningsedition.com. Sam's going to be back in the studio this Friday, so you only have a couple of days to read it, but the main character in Sam's book is nicknamed Teabag. Now, if you want to know where that comes from in terms of his particular life, Lewis Minor's life, you should purchase the book. Here's a little taste.
Just turn to my intimate portraits page in the yearbook, and you'll see that I was never anything approaching buck-like, not unless there's such a thing in nature as a buck turtle.
Truly one of the funniest writers on the scene today, and I'm not saying that just because he's my friend. If you were a fan of Kurt Vonnegut, Joseph Heller, Stanley Elkin, any of the great satirical writing of the 70s, this will really refresh you, because no one's writing like this cat anymore, and you will laugh aloud in a way that you don't laugh at David Sedaris. Now, I will...
let's go!
So, listen, Mick Ware is going to be here in the next segment. We love Mick. He's been embedded in Iraq, and he's going to give us the lowdown later in the show. Noah Feldman, professor and attorney, constitutional advisor to the Coalition Provisional Authority, who helped draft the temporary constitution for Iraq. He's also an American constitution genius. He's going to be with us later in the hour to talk about some stuff. But right now, President Bush is, reaching out in a relatively desperate way today, I believe he's meeting with the Congressional Black Caucus.
But yes, he is.
A couple of days ago, he met with the neocon death cult Black Lackey Brigade.
Well, this was yesterday.
Yeah.
He met with 14 clergy people, 10, quote, leaders from business and nonprofit groups. The main person that is quoted in the article that we have before us is a guy named Robert Woodson Sr.,
mm-hmm.
who is the head of the National Center for Neighborhood Enterprise. I before we got on the air, sort of flummoxed him a little bit. He does have some stuff that, you know, this organization, which is a national one, does deal with certain issues.
Retract my comment then. These aren't
he is a Bush lackey.
Okay.
there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, right.
No, just because he's got a couple of programs doesn't not make him a lackey,
mm-hmm.
that's for sure. But see, now what Bush is doing is now trying to reach out to the black community with regard to his revamping of Social Security.
Right.
He has always felt, and I think that Bush sincerely believes this, that his call for an ownership society will benefit blacks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's interesting about this is that Bill Clinton actually provided the tools for an ownership society in the black community, and in fact, home ownership reached historic highs in the Clinton, they've continued to go up, but they really reached historic highs during the Clinton years.
Now, what is that? How does that work out? Because, like, I know as a new homeowner, mm-hmm. that it took a lot for me to realize that if I buy a home, that it's a good investment and that I won't lose money.
Well, see, what happened was, because blacks don't generally have access to credit
mm-hmm.
on the same level that whites do, blacks were not getting home loans and mortgages at the same rates that whites were.
Mm-hmm.
What ended up happening was Bill Clinton opened that up through certain programs that actually pre-existed his presidency, Fannie Mae and Sallie Mae and these various mortgage lending companies. And what ended up happening was that blacks were able, as I was, to get, you know, a home loan at a relatively low rate and with a relatively low down payment, which is the most important thing that bars access to home ownership to black people, is just not having the savings enough to put that, you know, to put down 10-12%.
Yeah, that's a tough nut to get together, man. I mean, I never had that kind of savings, and then when I had a little bit of money, my wife talked me into it, and I was still afraid of it. I just couldn't understand. Being in debt frightens me, and also just the idea that what if I lose money?
Well, see, this is what Bush is trying to. This is how he's trying to sell the black community on his Social Security plan,
mm-hmm.
that it is an ownership situation. He knows, for example, that blacks depend far more on Social Security than their white counterparts do at retirement.
One out of three blacks.
Yeah, one out of three blacks. 65
years old.
And another very telling statistic in that is that older African Americans receive more than 44% of their total income from Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big chunk. That's almost half. So what that means is blacks have had a vested interest in maintaining the Social Security system as is. Blacks have been generally very, very nervous about changes to the system.
So now, Bush sees them as his hardest sell on some level, I'm sure.
Yeah, and what he's selling is the idea that an overhaul that would allow people to invest part of their Social Security money in some kind of a private investment account would, and this is according to White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan, quote, enable them to build a nest egg of their own and be able to pass that nest egg on to their survivors, unquote. Now, what that means is, first of all, he's saying to black people, look, you all aren't going to be here as long as we are. So, you know, if you have some heirs that are not, you know, 40 years old already, you can pass this nest egg on to them.
Well, there's a couple of concerns here that we were just talking about on the break, Riley. I mean, first of all, you know, one of the reasons that, that black mortality rate is different than white in a lot of ways is a health care problem.
Yeah.
And it's an insurance coverage problem.
Well, yeah, blacks are disproportionately represented in those not covered by health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
That's 45 million Americans.
So, in a way, you know, George Bush's policies and the policies that the Republicans support are part of the reason why black men and women die at a younger age.
Yeah, well, he's not talking about actually reaching out and dealing with the problem. He's just saying the problem exists, and this is why my program will work better for you. It's pretty much a given. You're going to die before we do anyway.
Right, and then the fear of that being then is that if these private accounts, that first of all, there is no Social Security crisis. This is the casinoization of Social Security. And the truth of the matter is that if we are to open private accounts with money that is supposed to be put aside for us for Social Security, why don't they just give us some money? See, my fear is, for anybody, is that you're going to have advisors who are at the behest of the Social Security Administration that are basically brokers misguiding people's money.
And shunting that money off to Bush's donors, you know, bankers.
He's trying to talk black people into gambling like the rest of us.
I got news for you. I don't think he's going to sell it very well.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, Mick Ware.
Great.
He's going to tell us what's going on in Iraq. We're down to 4 days before the election. We'll get the latest here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
You.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. We're going to be talking about the Rice confirmation hearings later. The Democrats, all of them.
Yeah.
God, you know, if she were in the room, I think they would have been throwing produce at her. It was terrific. It was a celebration. You know, if she were in the room, they would have had her perched over a tank of water and given all the Democrats a shot with a baseball to see if you could dunk her. Oh, it's great. We're going to be hearing about that later. But today we got her palm pilot who, yeah, you know what? Yeah, Raymond was wearing a wig.
Woo!
Not only just a wig, but a Condi wig.
A Condi wig?
I don't know, dude. Here we go. Here's our palm pilot for today. 6 a.m., wake up. 1 hour on rowing machine. Must work off rage against boxer. Boxer! Boxer! 7 a.m., excess tension remains. Damn you, boxer! Private time. No calls. 8 a.m., tension gone. Long shower. 9 a.m., dress for confirmation. Choose outfit that says, humorless automaton, but with a naughty streak. 11 a.m., show up late for hearing. They can wait for me today.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. 11 p.m., exchange withering glances with Barbara Boxer, then laugh to break unbearable sexual tension. Oh, Barbara. Oh, that's going to get us in trouble, that one. 3 p.m., after confirmation, call president husband. Why do I keep saying that? 10 p.m., lights out, private time. Oh, Barbara. Oh, boy.
Wow.
Oh, no.
You're going straight to Hades.
Man.
Hades. Hades.
You know, what can you say? What can you say? I'll tell you.
I don't know. You must feel like George Bush talking to a bunch of black people.
Well, you know, it's one of those awkward moments where we make decisions on the show, but it's funny. There's some funny there. I like the funny.
Yeah.
So, now, it was amazing to me to have the Democrats. I mean, yesterday, I don't know if it was because she wasn't in the room or whether they would have behaved the same way if she was, but man, they were each taking shots. It was beautiful.
Yeah, they were. But you know what? it's going to go through anyway. You know that.
Why is that, Riley? Why? I mean, obviously they can't stop it with a vote, but, you know, what would hurt them? I know quite a few of them are voting against her, it seems.
You know, they're saying in some of the reports I've seen about a dozen will end up voting against her. Now, there are 45 Democrats, so if only a dozen vote against, that means something on the order of 37 will vote for. Mm-hmm. People like Dianne Feinstein have a personal thing, because mm-hmm. she's been friends with Rice back to her days at Stanford.
Right.
You know, even though she's not from California, it seems as though Californians, except for Barbara Boxer, have kind of taken her as one of their own. So Dianne Feinstein obviously is going to vote for her. Joe Lieberman's going to vote for her. There are a number of people who are going to, I guess, jump ship in this instance. And remember, there is nobody in either House of Congress, or certainly not at the DNC, who's going to take any of these Democrats to task on this. They're all going to vote the way they feel like voting, because that's what they do.
I just couldn't believe, you know, Andrew Card, the White House Chief of Staff, yes?
Yeah.
And Frist, and Senator Bill Frist.
Yeah, they call it petty partisan politics.
But you know
what?
It's like, it's heinous to me that they would shamelessly condescend like that. It's not petty politics. It's exactly what the Democrats should be doing. It's their job as people that respect the Constitution to at least provide some, you know, check and balance there. You know, I mean, it was brilliant what Byrd, you know, quoting the Federalist Papers, you know, he got up there.
Wrong one, but hey, you know.
Well,
he quoted 76. It turns out the quote was from 77.
Well, that's all right. You know, he
he's 87 years old. What do you want from the guy?
Dude, he was there when they wrote it.
I know.
These things get confusing. But he said, Alexander Hamilton wrote, "It will readily be comprehended that a man who had himself the sole disposition of offices would be governed much more by his private inclinations and interests than when he was bound to submit the propriety of his choice to the discussion and determination of a different and independent body, and that body an entire branch of the legislature." Even though they say that there's no chance that we're not going to, you know, that this woman is not going through, the idea of saying, "Look, we don't like you. We think you're wrong. You're a liar. You represent an administration of liars, and none of us, you stink." All right, and we just want to put that on the record, because it's our job as legislatures to, you know, for the record and for the, you know, for at least the survival of the Democratic Party, to show that we have spirit and we have some sort of, you know, integrity in terms of, you know, calling what really happened what happened.
See, this is the interesting thing that we see going on, not just with Condoleezza Rice, but across the spectrum of the Bush administration cabinet appointees.
Uh-huh.
These are people who have no... I mean, if you look at Condoleezza Rice's record...
Yes.
Why in the world would any of these people vote for her? If you look at what she did on Iraq alone, okay? And remember that as Secretary of State, her job is to deal with foreign governments. Well, look at what she did with Iraq. She constantly misrepresented the actual situation, right down to the question of how many trained Iraqi troops there were mm-hmm. when she went back and forth with Joe Biden, who's going to vote for her.
Yeah, it's like I have a really hard time understanding that.
Well, because the administration has spun a web worthy of you know, the biggest spider in the universe. These people have managed to take negatives and turn them into positives. They managed to take John Ashcroft, a guy who lost the legislative election to a dead guy, turn him into an attorney general who wholesale abrogated the rights of the American people, and he retires and says, "Hey, we kept the country safe. Aren't I wonderful?" You see, if you control the means of people gaining access to information, you control the information. So Condoleezza Rice, in a lot of people's minds, isn't the architect of the disaster that has become Iraq. She's never lied to the Congress, never lied to the American people. She is the first black woman Secretary of State designate. And by the way, somebody is going to call Robert Byrd on being a former Klansman and opposing Condoleezza Rice. You watch and see if it doesn't happen before this day is done.
Yeah, but, you know, that's an interesting thing. But, you know, that's what these guys like to do. Is they, like, they, you know, the Republicans do not like to give anybody credit for, you know, for changing and becoming a better person. Yet they'll reward.
Unless it's one of their own. I mean, George Bush is a story of redemption if his early life is to be believed.
Right, but they barely want to talk about that.
Oh, they don't want to talk about it at
all. You know, but they railed on Kerry. They destroyed Kerry in a lot of ways, his reputation, in terms of, you know, how they portrayed him in advertising, and, and then petty politics, and then, you know, that this woman is really the mouthpiece. She is the one that told the lies. She's the one that facilitated, you know, the information that was still under question in the CIA to get out to the public and to help sell this war.
And she's not going to get off the reservation, plantation, however you want to describe it, in terms of her stewardship as Secretary of State. She is not going to publicly disagree with George W. Bush. She is going to be the mouthpiece for his view of the world. And his view of the world not only scares people in this country, it scares people all around the world.
And it completely serves the neocon agenda that was laid out a long time ago. That's the saddest thing about this another term, is that not only does he not have a mandate, but he's given these guys, these creepy dudes, he's given Rumsfeld, this sort of, you know, high priest that oversees, you know, human sacrifice for the neocon death cult, and all the people that designed this, you know, this
Cambone, Fife,
but
Wolfowitz.
They can just sit there and say, look, you know, we don't care what any of these people say. We don't care. Public opinion doesn't daunt us. You know, what we're doing there in this sort of failed free market experiment is going, you know, we've got all the time. We've got 4 years to make this thing go away, or to make it work the way we want to, without any resistance at all. That's all they see.
4 years, 150,000 American troops, and $1 billion a week. That's what they got.
And then they've got Condi Rice, who's going to go out there and try and, you know, charm foreign dignitaries into thinking that, you know, everything's copacetic.
Yeah, that's exactly what she's going to be. In terms of the Bush worldview, absolutely. Condoleezza Rice's job, and you watch what she does. I believe the first place where she's going to go, it will be Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
These emerging countries, the former republics in the former Soviet Union, these different places that are now just emerging as nation states. And their tendency, because they were under communist rule for so long, has been to gravitate toward the West, what they see as the benefits of the West. And you watch and see how Condoleezza Rice tries to cultivate them. I bet you sooner or later she's going to start arguing for these some of these states to become members of the European Union to counterbalance what Donald Rumsfeld described as old Europe, the Frances, the Great Britain.
And that's sort of her specialist, too. That's her specialty, is Soviet politics. And maybe that's why that you think she's going to start there,
she's
right?
going to start there, because that's where the most malleable nation states are. And see, that if they can maintain some kind of a holding action in the Middle East, if they can maintain the status quo, whatever that is,
yeah,
in the Middle East, then they'll be fine. The problem that they have is that these troops, they're going to have to be at least 150,000 troops in Iraq for at least the next 2 years.
Yeah, no matter what the government is. Hopefully, at some point during the broadcast here, we'll get Mick Ware on the phone again. He is in Iraq,
yes,
and it is hard to get hold of him, and we were hoping to have him for this segment, but we're going to keep trying.
Yeah.
But when we come back, most likely, we will be playing some sound. We're going to be hearing from Senator Kennedy, from Senator Dayton.
Yeah.
We'll be hearing a little bit from Senator Byrd. So stay tuned with us here on Air America Radio. It's 44 past the hour.
This is Congressman Barney Frank, and you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Having trouble.
I'm pleased to announce my nomination of Dr. Condoleezza Rice to be America's Secretary of State. During the last 4 years, I've relied on her counsel.
There's only you in my life.
Benefited from her great experience,
the
strength, the grace.
I guess you'd say it was love at first sight.
My first love.
I'm very grateful to you,
my dear friend and mentor.
I am very much looking forward to joining the fraternity.
And now I'm honored that she's agreed to serve in my cabinet.
This is humbling.
I can't tell you how much I love Connie Rice.
He is one of the finest public servants our nation has ever produced.
I can't tell you how lucky I am. No one
else will. It was my honor to serve alongside him.
And when we come together.
Now, that's an image that I particularly like.
Connie's true ambition is beyond my power to grant. We have one future that binds us.
Connie Rice is the right person for that challenge.
Okay, 50 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley
on
Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. So, man, these Democrats, they kicked some arse yesterday, I thought. I wish you were in the room. I would have loved to have seen her face. Just sort of like, you know, sitting there taking it, being called a liar, being called, an apologist for the Bush administration and the neocon death cult.
You think any of them would have said it if she had been sitting in the room?
I wonder.
I wonder, too.
You know, Boxer certainly would have.
Oh, Boxer don't care.
Yeah.
Notice how they kind of edited her out of yesterday's discussion? She had an hour just like Byrd did. But there's no quotes from her. There are very few quotes from Barbara Boxer's...
From yesterday?
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about. Maybe they feel like, she had her day the other day.
She's got her 15 minutes.
Her and Biden got to really take good shots at her before. But let's listen to, I think we've got Senator Robert Byrd, discussing, why it's important to have these discussions. Isn't that what he's talking about? Here we go, Chris.
I cannot endorse higher responsibilities for those who helped to set our great country down the path of increasing isolation, enmity in the world, and a war that has no end. Oh, when will our boys come home? When will our men and women be able to sit down at the table with their families and their friends in their own communities again? For these reasons, I shall cast my vote in opposition to the confirmation of Condoleezza Rice to be the next Secretary of State.
I love it. You know, it's like, and I'm not a political junkie, I never was, but I'll tell you, when I hear stuff like that, when I hear somebody that has had the career and the respect that he has for his job as a senator, mm-hmm. and the respect for the Constitution he has, given, you know, whatever his past might have been, there's a nobility to the way he sort of presents things that you really don't hear much anymore.
Well, the thing is, Condoleezza Rice could not answer a single one of Robert Byrd's questions.
Mm-hmm.
When is the war going to end? When are the troops coming home? She doesn't know. Even though she's the architect of the policy, she has no idea. The Bush administration has no idea, and Robert Byrd knows it. And I think he's right to say that the architect of this policy should not be rewarded for it, because it hasn't worked.
The policy of perpetual war.
The policy of perpetual war.
And thus the policy of perpetual fear-mongering on behalf of the populace.
Yeah, because you have to justify perpetual war.
Right.
I mean, in America, despite the slavish devotion of some to the whims of the commander-in-chief, you do have to, for most Americans, justify what are we doing?
I'll tell you, man. Nothing. Every day, not a day doesn't go by when I don't get aggravated at the amount of fear that they put this country into leading up to the elections. That was completely unwarranted. Now, just the other day, yesterday, that the terrorist threat of when I was up in Boston.
In Boston, yeah, it's all a hoax.
It turned out to be a complete hoax. Like, they couldn't even filter that one. And there has been one significant terrorist threat, since the election. I mean, I can't even imagine how people can't see that they've been rooked. Even the people that voted for him, basically. On the reason he won this election was because this campaign of fear worked.
But see, now, let's strip away this Boston thing for a minute. Aside from the fact that apparently it was a hoax, they were looking for a certain group of people, right?
Yeah.
Did they find any of them?
No.
That should scare people. That's the thing that should scare me.
And they had pictures, and one of them was apparently not even,
they got one, I think, and they ended up releasing that person, but they're looking for all these different people, and the fact of the matter is, if it was a credible threat, they couldn't put their hands on the people that were central to their investigation.
Right, and bringing this back around to Rice is that this is the tone of culture that they are committing to. This is the monster that she's helped create.
Yes.
Is that when you have this perpetual war against, an ever-elusive enemy that is not bound by nations... And, even if there is no threat, there is just a persistent, sort of very immediate fear that can be tapped into at any given point in time to make people do what they want them to do in terms of voting, in terms of behaving a certain way, in terms of, committing to narrow-minded ideologies out of fear. It's just like she's just as responsible as Rumsfeld, as Bush, as Wolfowitz, as Cheney. She is a criminal in my head.
And to a large extent, Mark, I think there are a lot of people who are disappointed with the relatively small number of Democrats in the Senate who are going to stand up and say what needs to be said about Condoleezza Rice's confirmation as Secretary of State. The fact of the matter is, people should be saying, you know what, you need to do better than this.
Yeah.
You need to have somebody who is truly, you know, truly has the credentials to be the public face of America's ship of state. And Condoleezza Rice, and hey, she's black, I'm black. That does not blind me to her glaring faults as National Security Advisor.
Sure.
Just that wasn't up to the job.
Yep. Hey, Chris, can we hear a taste of Senator Kennedy?
There was no reason to go to war in Iraq when we did, the way we did, and for the false reasons we were given. As a principal architect of our failed policy, Dr. Rice is the wrong choice for Secretary of State.
Isn't that great?
Mm.
There's something about the Kennedy tenor that still I find very moving. And I wasn't even alive when JFK was alive, but you can hear it underneath there. You
well,
know
you
I
mean? Can. You can hear it through him. You can hear it through John Kennedy's speeches. You can hear it through Robert Kennedy's speeches.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe John Kerry, you know, kind of suffered by comparison, you know, being
sure.
from Massachusetts and the whole nine. But, you know, what Ted Kennedy said was absolutely true. There needs to be some accountability. You've got to come up with something more than vague generalizations to justify what this person did with regard to the war in Iraq.
Yeah.
The American people demand, that should demand better than that.
Yeah, at least the, you know, 56 million of us who didn't vote for the schmuck.
And the others who did, they need to know, too.
All right, there's the liberal agenda from the Streisand Confidant. Chris, you know I don't think you're a wuss, right?
Whatever.
Oh. What? Warn Senate Democrats that if they continue their belligerent tone, they're in real danger of defining themselves. Two, urge Senate Democrats to hold up confirmation of Condi Rice until Republicans find a qualified black woman. Three, complain that touchscreen voting machines will ruin the Iraqi election. Four, criticize Oscar voters for not giving Fahrenheit 9/11 a nomination. Finding Neverland? Are you serious? Five, today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. Oh, hey, hate to bring you down with world events, man. I know you're really busy trying to sell your movie at Sundance this week. Wake up, sheeple. Robert Redford won't help you, man. So we got a big hour coming up?
We got a big hour coming up. We got some more fire from the Condoleezza Rice debate.
Senator Dayton sound.
Senator Dayton, boy, he wasn't playing.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a few other things coming up, including look at your dreams and
why
yours
not?
As well, listeners, when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Hi, to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning's Edition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning, people that were disappointed that The Passion did not get a Best Picture nod or Best Director nod. You know, good morning to the gentleman who's very upset about our discussion about slang words that we had earlier. Take it easy, will you? We're all on the same team here. And good morning, Mark Riley. How
good
are you?
Good morning, Mark Maron. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. You know, it's weird to me. Well, first of all, let's cover a couple of things. That you know, Mick Ware was supposed to be on. I know some people are fans of Mick Ware. We know we are.
We are,
and there's
yeah.
always a chance that when we try to get Mick on the phone, he is embedded. He does spend a lot of time on the...
covering the news.
On the enemy side of the line as well. You know, covering from that angle, he's one of the only guys that does it. And it just turns out that, you know, in the last 24 hours... in Iraq, it's just been catastrophic. A U.S. convoy was attacked on the road to Baghdad to the Baghdad airport. At least one vehicle was destroyed. U.S. troops have found at least six bombs at different locations around Baghdad. The military said that Iraqi police discovered two more bombs in the Holy Shiite, the city of Najaf. Two schools slated to be used as polling stations were bombed overnight. Gunmen opened fire on the local headquarters of the Communist Party. I mean, wow. It is going nuts there right now.
Well, you know, I saw a quote from an Iraqi in an article. I think it was yesterday or Monday.
Yeah.
It said, we don't want elections. We want electricity.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that could well be. Now, the insurgents want something very different, and I don't want to confuse people about that. Certainly, the insurgents do not want to see an election take place for their own set of reasons. But it seems as though everyday Iraqis want their power on. They want water. They want the they want the opportunity to perhaps work for a living, for money.
Yeah.
These are things that they want, and they don't see the Americans, quite frankly, providing any of this.
But
for them.
Yeah, but in terms of Mick, you know, I mean, when there's that much going on, I'm sure he had to, you know, jump in and do some other stuff. Hopefully, we'll get him on in the next couple of days, maybe even later in the show, because he's the best guy.
He's great. He's really great. But I do know that he's probably out covering some of this violence that's taking place.
Sure, he must be. So let's talk about this, because, you know, all of a sudden CNN's talking about it, and it makes news that, you know, like, for some reason, just because, you know, Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ made, you know, $500 million or whatever it made in this country, that people feel that it's entitled to a Best Picture nod. Now, first of all, whether you believe in the Oscars or not is not the case. The truth of the matter is that just because somebody likes something doesn't mean it's good, number one. And then also to characterize Hollywood as, you know, as shutting out religion, or this being some sort of example of the liberal left, or the anti-Christian sort of, like, to play victim in this is completely ridiculous, and you should just shut your holes. Because the truth of the matter is that The Passion of the Christ was a bad movie. It was a bad movie for a lot of reasons. It was a bad movie because it didn't even explore the teachings of Jesus. It was basically just a, you know, gratuitous two and a half hour long, you know, snuff film. You know, it had, you know, the direction was shoddy. It was sort of hackneyed. You know, the Arabic was difficult, but not if you speak Arabic. I'm not knocking it, the Aramaic. I'm not knocking it, but, you know, it was sort of difficult. And the truth of the matter is just the fact that it did not, engage in the teachings of Christ whatsoever. It was just really a portrait of the man's pain. Now, truth of the matter is, again, I'm saying that over and over again, is that there are plenty of people that will hang up hackneyed pictures of Jesus in their houses, in their apartments, little pictures of winking Jesus over the toilet so you feel better in the morning. You know, and if these are the same people that, you know, are spending all this money to see this film and then demand that, you know, Hollywood acknowledge it, for what? For what? You know, it is a religious movie meant for religious people. You know, it is just a portrait of someone's pain. It was done nothing. It did nothing but instigate division in my, you know, my eyes.
Now, let me ask you something. Did Fahrenheit 9/11 get any nominations?
No.
So they didn't get any nominations either.
Well, they got nominations. You know, okay, The Passion of the Christ got some nominations, but it did not get Best Picture, Best Director. Neither did Fahrenheit 9/11.
Fahrenheit 9/11 wasn't submitted.
It was submitted, but I mean, but it was not. It didn't get it for Best Documentary, and it did not, you know, get the Best Picture nod. What did get it was let's see, performance by an actor, the Best Actor, Don Cheadle in Hotel Rwanda, which I haven't seen. Johnny Depp in Finding Neverland, which no, I don't think so. Leonardo DiCaprio, The Aviator, good job. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to get it. Clint Eastwood, Million Dollar Baby. P.W. McDonald seems to think this is a long shot. I tend to disagree a little bit. I think it's possible.
Sure, it's possible.
And Brendan's like, nah, it's not. There's just no way. Jamie Foxx and Ray, is that, you think Jamie's going to get it?
There was a lot of early buzz about him. I don't know if he's going to get it, but there was a lot of buzz about him when that movie came out.
Brendan gets very worked up about this stuff. I feel like he should be in here to talk about the Oscars.
I hate the Oscars.
Oh, man, him and Kent the Colonel Jones yesterday, it was like they were, like, you know, screaming. It was like
what did
high
they
school cheerleaders at a football game. They were getting all excited about the Oscars.
Really?
I used to get excited, but I can't tell you, the last time I watched him, when I was younger, I used to be just obsessed with it. I used to be obsessed with the Best Actor thing. I used to be obsessed with actors and, like, you know, geniuses and, like, you know, Robert De Niro and Pacino and all these cats. Like, I used to really get worked up about the Oscars. And then for some reason, I just started to realize that a lot of the movies that they choose suck. And, you know, it's always a little bit disappointing.
I don't know. The Oscars seems to me to be one big butt-kissing ceremony.
Sure.
Everybody walks around, oh, you're wonderful, and, you know, they'll stick a shiv in your back if they get a chance. But, you know, for that one night on the red carpet out there, everybody's wonderful.
But the only one, the ones that are really good, the Best Actor in the Supporting Role, that a lot of times those are the real... The great awards, because those usually go to the guys that, you know, most of the time deserve it, I think.
The nuts and bolts of the good BW? Pictures.
Yeah, kind of. He's in the booth. Do you want to come in here?
Come on in here.
We don't got time right now?
Oh.
All right, we'll bring him in the next segment to talk Oscars. Maybe not this segment. Okay. No, next segment we're doing Dream.
Before the show's done.
How about the 8 o'clock hour? How would that be? Yes. So Alan Alda in The Aviator definitely deserves a nomination. That was a great performance. Alda, the later Alda as an old man, is tremendous, especially when he plays some sort of evil guy. Thomas Hayden Church, genius in Sideways. And Paul Giamatti, is that how you pronounce his last name? Giamatti. He, you know, as good as he was not as good as Thomas Hayden Church.
Really?
Thomas Hayden Church, if they were going to choose somebody, I feel bad that Paul got, you know, dissed because I think he did a great performance, but he's a guy, no character actor works more than that guy. You know, so he's going to get his shot. And I'm sorry, Paul, you didn't get it this year, but Thomas Hayden Church was absolutely brilliant in Sideways, without a doubt. And then we got Jamie Foxx in Collateral. He's up for two.
He's up for two, yeah.
Morgan Freeman, Million Dollar Baby. Morgan Freeman's done better, but he was good in that. Clive Owen was great in Closer. I don't know if he deserves the Best Actor. Now, Best Actress, Annette Bening and Being Julia, I did not see. Catalina Sandino Marino and Maria Full of Grace, genius. She was genius.
Really?
Unbelievable movie.
A lot of good buzz on that film, too. That's a foreign film, though, right?
It's a great movie.
Yeah?
I believe it's a... Is it a Mexican or Colombian? I'm not sure. I'll double-check on the break, but it's
was it nominated for Best Foreign Film? I wonder.
It was nominated... Let me see. Best Foreign Film, Moving Down? No, it wasn't. It was not. But it's an amazing movie about drug mules, about women who were sort of, because of their economic situation, forced in the situation to smuggle... heroin in their intestines. Hilary Swank, Million Dollar Baby, she did a great job. Kate Winslet, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, great job. Great movie. I guess we'll talk a little bit more about this later, hopefully, in the 8 o'clock.
Why aren't you talking about the issues?
We're going to talk a little bit more about Condi Rice when we
come
back. Oh,
well,
back,
then she's an issue.
It's 14 past the hour on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Nineteen past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Man, we're jamming today. It's a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know. Some days it used to be Wednesdays made me tired, but no more, Mark Riley.
Me neither, man. It's very weird. Midweek, New Year.
Makes perfect sense, man.
Yeah.
It takes 2 days just to adjust to the week.
Yes.
So the Democrats swinging away at a Condi Rice that was not in the room, but that's all right. Maybe it freed him up a bit.
It freed them up to speak their minds in at least a couple of cases here. We heard from Ted Kennedy. We heard from Senator Robert Byrd. And both of them, to their credit, are not going to be voting for Condoleezza Rice. By the way, that vote will come up later today.
That's going to happen today.
Yes, that will happen today. The full Senate will vote on Condoleezza Rice's nomination to become the American Secretary of State.
Being the sort of relatively marginally informed doofus that I am, I didn't know Senator Mark Dayton. I didn't know
his,
I didn't know his work. I didn't know his fury. But, man, he kicked it up. He kicked it up a notch yesterday.
Yes, he did.
I like it when all of a sudden you're like, hey, who's that guy? You know, it's like, did you hear this band? You know what I mean? Like, where'd these guys come from?
It felt like he was channeling Paul Wellstone for a minute.
He must have known him. They're from the same state.
Same state, politics.
But I was very impressed with the way he laid it out. Can we hear that, Chris?
Thank goodness for a free and vigilant press to ferret out the truth and to report the truth, because we cannot get the truth from this administration. And sadly, the attitude of too many of my colleagues across the aisle is our president wrong, wrong, or wrong. They defend him, they protect him, and they allow his top administration officials to get away with lying. Lying to Congress, lying to our committees, and lying to the American people. It's wrong, it's immoral, it's un-American, and it has to stop. It stops by not promoting top administration officials who engage in the practice, who have been instrumental in deceiving Congress and the American people. And regrettably, that includes Dr. Rice.
So that's some serious stones there, wouldn't you say, Riley?
Pow!
Yeah, I thought it was great, man.
Yeah, I mean, look, he laid it out. He laid it out very directly, very succinctly. It's not going to stop Condoleezza Rice from becoming Secretary of State. But what's interesting about this, Mark, is that the Republicans really reacted badly when the Democrats said, well, you know what, we're going to have to delay this nominations so that we can more fully debate it.
So we can speak, because you bullies, you turd bags, have monopolized the entire dialogue, and with your condescending, shameless arrogance and your the way you label this petty politics or political maneuvering. No, this is the Democratic Party, doing what they do in terms of in relation to their constitutional rights to provoke a debate. I mean, it's the thing that Bob Byrd. Quoted. This is the Federalist number 76. You said yes.
No, 77.
But okay, so
he called it 77.
Okay, but it is actually 77. He's quoting Alexander Hamilton. I might as well just quote Alexander Hamilton. Why do I got to quote Robert Burgoyne? Right. It will readily be comprehended that a man who had himself the sole disposition of offices would be governed much more by his private inclinations and interests than when he was bound to submit the propriety of his choice to the discussion and determination of a different and independent body, and that body an entire branch of the legislature. I had to read this four or five times just to parse it and figure it out for myself. Basically, yeah. You can't just have someone saying what they're going to do with their own mind and doing it without, the other side, the legislative body, both sides saying, is this the right thing to do? Is it the wrong thing to do? Is this legitimate? Is it honest? Does it have an integrity? Are we being lied to? And whether or not they are going to vote her out or not, which they're not, to get this stuff out there on the record to the American people, just in terms of, reinvigorating the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't begin to look at ourselves like a bunch of, whiny, sour, grape people, because we're not. What we're doing is we're fighting for a voice against a tide of condescending turd liars.
You know what's going to be interesting, Mark, is to see whether this debate around Condoleezza Rice is going to affect at all the confirmation process for Alberto Gonzalez, the Attorney General designate, because there are ominous signs now coming out of the Senate that Alberto Gonzalez may have a much, much closer vote than Condoleezza Rice. Right now they're saying there's only about a dozen Democrats who are going to vote against Rice. There could be scores more who vote against Torquemada.
Torquemada Gonzalez. Hey, it's not torture unless they die. Anything up to that is just a discussion.
See, they've got the torture on him, they've got Bush's DUI on him, and they've got Bernie Kerik on him.
And they've also got the fact that, he never briefed the governor, Bush, properly when it came to killing people on death row, that he made it easy for them to pull the switch without really getting into the nuances of particular cases.
Yeah.
This guy is a conscienceless dweeb. I mean, he's just... Right. And just his whole physical and mental and emotional and his public demeanor is sort of like, I'm just happy to be next to the power.
You sound like Peter Lorre.
Yes.
But you know what? It could signal the Democrats showing for the first time their public spine. You know what else is starting to become very interesting is this race for the DNC. And, of course, we're going to have some of the candidates with us next week.
Yeah.
Some of the people who want to be chair of the Democratic National Committee. A group of black Democrats has now decided to back Howard Dean, despite the fact that Dean's black input when he ran for president was very much open to question. In fact, Al Sharpton was the person who questioned it. But now people like Jesse Jackson Jr., Mignon Moore, who's a member of the DNC and was at one time worked in the Clinton administration and was Jesse Jackson's chief of staff for a while. She is now supporting Howard Dean. He may have it, I won't say locked up, but he's got a much better shot than he had a week ago.
He's definitely got spine. And like getting back to the Rice hearings, let's hear that second Dayton piece talking about spine.
Yeah.
I don't like to impugn anyone's integrity, but I really don't like being lied to repeatedly, flagrantly, intentionally. It's wrong, it's undemocratic, it's un-American, and it's dangerous. It is very, very dangerous. And it is occurring far too frequently in this administration. And this Congress, this Senate, must demand that it stop now. My vote against this nomination is my statement that this administration's lying must stop now. I urge my colleagues to join me in this demand. Democrats, Republicans, independents, we are all of us, first and foremost, Americans.
Yeah, you see, this is a good sign, Riley. What you were saying about Dean before, about, black voters starting to, come around to Dean as DNC chairman, and people, high-profile people throughout the Democratic Party, and I'm certainly excited about it, is that I think it's going to reinvigorate the party. I also think that these people standing up you know, the senators that are standing up to this confirmation and just speaking their mind, whether, you know, whether she gets confirmed or not, is also going to get people excited. It's a proximity high. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and right now Democrats need that. Okay, mm-hmm. The Democratic Party lost the last election, had further erosions in their numbers in Congress. It is time now for the Democrats to start picking themselves up, picking their fights, and looking to win them.
Yeah. We're going to do my dream diary after the break. We're also soliciting you for your dreams at 866-303-2270. We're going to take a crack at reading them. Or
yeah.
Interpretation, some dream interpretation. But also it's been fun just to hear what your subconsciouses are doing. So,
and not too kinky, all right?
Yeah, 866-303-2270 with your dreams after this. Air America Radio.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley right there. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. As you know, I write down my dreams every day, and I'm about to do my dream diary, but after that we want to take calls from you about your dreams, which we will attempt to interpret, or at least have a nice conversation about, or at least just put out onto the air, especially if they're weird. So give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now, my turn. I'm out in a field with a bunch of Democratic legislators. Howard Dean comes out wearing fatigues and a drill sergeant's hat. He bangs two garbage lids together. Fall in line! Straighten that line! We're in a war, people! And if you want to survive this war, you're going to do everything I say. Now your mamas aren't here to clean up after you. And Tom Daschle's not here to wipe your precious liberal behinds. Look, we've tried it the nice way, now we're going to do it my way. Sergeant Kerry, front and center. John Kerry steps forward. Dean rips the stripes off of Kerry's uniform sleeve. You're done, Private Kerry. Get back in line. Obama, front and center. You're platoon leader now. Dean stands nose to nose with Barack Obama. Obama, next time some old white Republican tries to get you to approve a cabinet nomination, what are you going to do? Oppose it. I can't hear you. Oppose it, sir. That's right, Obama. And just so you remember that, drop and give me 20. Now, all of you. It wasn't the nicest thing you could do to Ted Kennedy, I promise. Then Dean says, all right, you candy asses, on three, I want you to scream. And I want them to hear it all the way back in Brattleboro. One, two, three. What's the matter? You've got mochaccino cut in your throat? Scream, damn it. Scream. One, two, three. Louder. Louder. All right, Democrats. Now let's go block some legislation. I woke up and my bed was filled with a new American century.
Ooh.
Now it's your turn. It's your turn. Give us a call at 866-303-2270. Tell us your dreams and we'll interpret them or at least chat about them. 866-303-2270. Let's see. What do we got here? Morgan, listening in Madison on the mic. How are you, Morgan? What's up?
I'm fine. Wow, you're creative.
Oh, we try.
Wow, what is inside your head, Mark?
Oh, yeah, I know. It never stops either. Listen. So what did you get?
My dream is not nearly as interesting as yours. However, it had an interesting twist, which is I've been dreaming a lot about a good friend of mine fighting, but we're cranky at each other, so that's explainable. But here's the twist. Old Dirty Bastard was a carpenter, like a contractor in my last dream. And he was around, and I swear to God he was packing, but he just kept giving us these awful looks, like he was out to get us.
Yeah.
And I just want to know why.
Out to get who? You?
The Old Dirty Bastard.
Out to get who? You and your friend?
Yeah.
So you're about to fight your friend. Old Dirty Bastard is there with the tool belt, and you know he's doing some work, kind of.
Yeah, totally.
And he's just looking at you like he's going to hurt you.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow.
And I swear there was an Uzi in there somewhere.
Wow. Well, I mean, despite the, you know...
Well, he never got in any trouble for an Uzi. He got in trouble for wearing bulletproof vests.
Yeah, well, Jesus was a carpenter.
Yeah.
So
that's right. That's hilarious.
Are you a Christian? Were you brought up Christian?
Oh God! If I ever entered a Christian church, I'd probably catch fire.
Oh, okay. So old dirty bastard. Maybe a Christ symbol in your dream. Perhaps a menacing sort of. Maybe there. Do you find any sexual attraction to old dirty bastard?
No, but it's funny that Jesus is out to get me or something.
Didn't he change his name and use something Jesus in it?
Yeah, maybe. Like baby Jesus.
Yeah, baby Jesus. Maybe that's where it comes from.
Baby Jesus with a gun.
With an Uzi.
Who's going to punish you for fighting your friend. This seems just, yeah, maybe just a guilt dream.
How to get the evil pagan who doesn't like their friend, yeah.
that's funny that there's a,
oh
you
know,
he's just,
he's,
yeah, old dirty bastard we've decided is a Jesus surrogate in your dream out to get you for not treating your friend properly.
Wow.
With an Uzi, yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, thanks. I hope we helped, Morgan.
You did, but can I ask one quick question? What's the name of that senator who you quoted yesterday with the speech?
Oh, you mean today? Well, there's Mark Dayton from Minnesota who, Robert Byrd quoting Alexander Hamilton from the Federalist Papers, number 77, right? Federalist Paper.
No, I was looking for Mark Dayton. He's from Minnesota.
Yeah.
My God, he and Senator Boxer need to get together and have lots of little senators.
I don't know. She's in her early 60s, but hey, we could talk to her about it.
You know, there's hormone therapy. There's lots of good stuff going on.
Well, we'll get that message out there. That sounds like a dream in and of itself.
Yeah, right.
Thank you very much, Morgan. Talk
Thanks,
to you later.
Morgan.
That was funny.
Wow.
Old dirty bastard, the Jesus figure.
Yeah.
The
I'm telling you, he called himself Baby Jesus for a while. He got rid of the old dirty bastard thing.
Yeah.
Then went back to it later on.
All right, let's talk to Lori, listening in Santa Fe in my home state of New Mexico. How are you, Lori?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Hi, Lori. What's it like in Santa Fe right now?
Yes.
Is it snowing?
It's great. It's beautiful. I mean, it's been warm. And, today we're getting some more gray, possibly snow, but it's been real nice here.
Is there skiing? How's it snow up in Taos?
Pretty good.
All right. So what was your dream? Let's take a crack at it.
Okay, well, I was having this very intense dream that I was in a school building or something like it, possibly a government building, and I was at a meeting, and the next thing I knew, I was sitting in a chair right next to Robert Kennedy, and he was talking to me, and I got to talk to him for a long time, and I felt like he was right there, alive and well, and I think it was probably because I was so inspired by what I saw in the Senate.
Yeah. Wow, I found that to be kind of touching, actually, what you just said, that you were in a public building, possibly a government building, and you were with one
or
of the... and you were with one of the great hopes of the Democratic Party, one of the great, real champions of democracy. I find that to be a very hopeful dream.
It was intense and very hopeful, and I couldn't resist calling to tell you about it.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate it.
I find that very touching. Thanks for sharing that, Lori.
Okay.
Take care.
I love when people who are heroes of yours or people who have been dead a long time show up in dreams and give you, a chance. Well, just if the dream is clear, it's almost as if it's a second opportunity. You know, it's an opportunity to spend some time with that person. If the dream is clear, and you wake up and like, wow, it was really good to see that person again.
I got a question for you, because obviously you get into a lot of dream stuff. How do you sort out which dreams stay with you and which ones you forget? Because I forget a lot of dreams.
What did you just ask me? I'm sorry.
How do you sort out which dreams you remember and which ones you don't?
Sometimes
how does that happen?
Well, obviously I write them down. Some of these, obviously the ones we do are we compose them. But and they're not, necessarily, I don't want to break
what?
The...
you don't have to destroy the magic here.
A lot of dreams, it's very important that you write them down, because then you can actually sort of, the only way you can really remember the feelings of a dream, which, kind of weave in and out, of time and place and space, is that, you know, if you write it down exactly as you remember it, as near, as close to waking up as you can,
yeah,
you can actually, you can bring it back up in your head if you capture it properly. Like a diary entry, like I was here, I was there, like, you know, what we do with the dream diaries, is that you can actually get back into it and feel those moments again. Yeah, the number is 866-303-2270. You want to do one more now, or you want to wait till after the break? Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's listen to the dream from Linda, listening in Atlanta. Good morning, Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Hey, good morning. Actually, I have two dreams, but I'll just stick with one.
Okay.
And first, can I just quickly say, go to a website, Contact Congress,
okay,
and there's a map of the U.S., and you can click on each state and get every representative contact. Contact them. Tell them to quit being pantyways.
Okay.
Stand up to the bastard Republicans and don't vote Condoleezza Rice in. I'm going to call everyone I can today.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll put that out. Thanks for that information. Now let's get into your head.
Yeah, right. you don't want to go there.
Uh-oh. What's the dream?
Like John Malkovich. Anyway, I'm standing in the backyard. It's evening and the moon is full. I'm standing in a backyard with a man and his two blonde twin daughters. And we're looking up at the moon and the stars, and it's just a very peaceful feeling. And then the next thing, I'm in the air flying very fast next to a NASA rocket that's been launched.
Wow.
Yeah. And I feel this male military presence, and it's very ominous and scary.
Right, but what did it feel good to go that fast?
No, I was terrified.
Oh, okay.
Then all of a sudden, the rocket turned into a beautiful female angel, and I was at total peace.
Oh my God!
Wow.
That's the whole dream.
Yeah.
And it ended
that way.
That's a beautiful dream, and we're gonna take a shot at parsing it out.
Yeah,
this
was a long time ago I had this dream, you know, and I've always wondered what it meant.
Well, we'll try to figure it out when we come back. It's 44 past the hour on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Laura, it was 49 past the hour. Sarah America Radio. It's Morning Sedition. Mark Riley.
Hey.
866-303-2270. We're listening to people's dreams, and people have been pretty candid today, and they all seem legitimate. We're talking to a woman named Laura down in Atlanta before, told us about a dream where she is standing next to a father with two twin daughters, two blonde-haired twin daughters, outside looking up. It's beautiful. And the next thing she knows, she's flying next to a rocket. A NASA rocket, way too fast. She's incredibly frightened, and the rocket turns into an angel. All I could say is
I'm at a loss for words.
Well, twins represent either, you know, some sort of duality, either opposing forces or else a sort of peaceful thing. You know, I had to go to some, you know, whack, some dream.
Some whack dream site.
Yeah, to try to figure this out. But, you know, obviously, you know, there is hope at the end of that dream. I mean, it turns into an angel. The rocket could have exploded into a fireball, could have turned into a lot of things. Maybe Laura's got some sort of a belief system at the core of her that enabled her in all that fear to actually see some sort of deliverance at the end of it. Or maybe she's, has some sort of by some sort of polarity going on about how she feels about, you know, the military or rockets or anything else. And you know, she hung up, so we can't really engage with her. But it was a good dream. It seemed like a real one.
Didn't you say that you thought that the twins thing might have something to do with our president?
Well, that was Larson. You know, I don't know. You know, it could, but the weird thing is a lot of times dreams, I think, work in symbols, you know, and maybe it could be a symbol for our president. But I think since it was so peaceful and there was a father there and didn't seem to be, you know, that part of the dream didn't seem uncomfortable. It seemed that there was a certain safety there.
Yeah.
You know, that she felt safe on the ground with the, you know, with the polarity, How come I can't say it?
Polarity?
No, plurality. P-L-U-R. Isn't that a word?
Oh, plurality.
Plurality.
Ah.
Anyways, let's move on. You know, I don't want to drive this into a ditch because I'm starting to think I can really do this. Krista in Phoenix streaming. What's going on, Krista? What'd you dream?
Hi, Krista.
Hi, Mark.
Hey.
I had a dream. I can't believe I got through so quickly. I only dialed once.
Uh-oh.
Well, yeah, you got lucky.
I know I did. It must be meant to be. Well, I had a dream a long time ago. I think it was about Tuesday. It was right after Jimmy Carter had won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Uh-huh.
And I had a dream where I was Secret Service for President Bush.
The first President Bush, yeah.
No, the second one.
Really?
The current one.
Okay, I got it. Okay.
Yeah, because Carter won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2001.
Okay, right. Yeah, okay. So you're a Secret Service person.
So, yeah, I got the dark sunglasses, the dark suit and everything. And the White House is having some kind of function. And, you know, all kinds of dignitaries are there. Jimmy Carter's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I start talking to Jimmy Carter. And we start having a nice time talking. And he says, hey, you want to go for a ride? And I'm like, yeah, okay. So I leave my post.
Yeah.
To go for a ride in Jimmy Carter's antique early 60s two-tone turquoise truck.
Nice.
Wow.
Pickup truck. It was a nice mint condition turquoise and white I don't know, looked like about 62, 64 maybe.
Like a Chevy?
No, it was a Ford.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Ford. All
right, okay.
I'm actually a Chevy person myself, so I don't understand why.
I see you have attention to detail in your dreams here.
And then what happened? So where do you guys go?
So, you know, we're driving around some back roads, some dirt roads, having a nice conversation, you know, having a good time. And we just, you know, we passed like a trailer. We passed a trailer, which was actually a trailer that was in my yard at in a previous place that I lived.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and we went in the trailer, and then we talked to the people in the trailer. We drove around some more. And then he took me back to the White House. I went back to the White House the next day. I'm thinking, oh, I'm in deep doo-doo now.
Yeah.
And I get in there, and President Bush and everybody, they're picking out colors for the rooms.
Wow.
So I guess they didn't notice I was gone or something. I don't know. But it was a great dream. I woke up feeling incredible. And it was the kind of dream where I didn't even have to write it down. I remember it vividly even now.
Yeah, I can hear that. Again, like there's some sort of weird hopefulness in that dream that here you are, you know, in this weird job of having to, you know, protect the president, who I'm assuming you don't even like.
Yeah, and in the dream I didn't like him either, so.
So you were stuck in this job protecting the president, and then, you know, a president you obviously respected says you want to take a spin in the truck. And you're like, yeah, of course. And you were willing to sort of like, you know, take the risk that this president might get, you know, hurt or nailed or shot, which would, you know, it could happen if you're a Secret Service person and you leave. But you had a great time riding around with the president you respected and seeing, you know, parts of your past and parts of the country. And it seemed like kind of idyllic in a way, right? Did you feel like...
It was very idyllic because, you know, it was a nice sunny summer day. You know, it wasn't too hot and it was...
And it had all these elements of being outside and being in an old truck and having a sort of nostalgia thing to it. And then you get back worrying that you're going to lose your job, and this president is just busy picking out colors for rooms, trying to manufacture some sort of idyllic situation, trying to manufacture or fool the people into thinking that things are new and fresh.
Yeah, now I never thought about that aspect of it, but you're right. You're right.
Wow. Well, there you go. Well, I that was fun. Thanks for calling, Krista.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Krista.
Okay, bye-bye.
Wow, Maren, you know, you're really getting good at this interpretation thing. I'm figuring, well, she's got Bush picking out colors because that's the only safe thing. That's safer than having him do what he normally does.
Well, that's it. That's
making war.
I think that with the dreams, I think you can go any way that you want to go. I mean, it's just sort of a poetic thing, and if it resonates, it resonates. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Well, I kind of thought she was going to, when she talked about going to the trailer with Jimmy Carter, I thought it was going to descend into...
Yeah, into... Yeah.
Well, it didn't go there, okay, but... Anyway.
And we didn't go there either. Hey, Jerry, how are you? Listening to LIB in Long Island. We only got a minute here.
Hi, Jerry.
How do I only have a minute?
Okay, good. Okay.
Sex dreams.
Okay.
Ever since Bush has been in the paper and in my life and ruining my life,
uh-huh.
I
have more sex dreams than I've ever had.
Wow.
And I've had my first lesbian dream.
Yay.
Yay, and guess what?
What?
It doesn't make me sick anymore. Thank you, Mr. Bush, for opening my eyes.
Oh,
wow.
My goodness.
You've been liberated and you're unconscious by the President of the United States.
Look at that. I have a new facet in my life I can explore. Thank you so much, you creepy President.
Well, I think you've analyzed your own dream, and thank you for sharing with us, Jerry. Really appreciate it.
Wow.
Have a good day at work. That was hilarious.
More sex dreams than ever since Bush was reelected.
Well, you know, sex, obviously, a diversionary tactic we all use to escape the realities of the world, you know, both unconsciously, obviously, and consciously. But that was hilarious.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, for me. I don't know about for you. You know,
I thought it was strictly to procreate.
No. It's to procreate and to avoid reality and keep it focused on the intimate sexual nature of things. But that's funny. This doesn't make her sick anymore. She actually enjoyed it. She's like trying to have more lesbian dreams and maybe even provoke a lesbian experience for Jerry.
We didn't even ask if she was married. I mean, what would her husband think about this?
Oh, you know, I don't know. But, you know, I think that was cute. You know, I who knows? You know? We all know.
Well.
So, in the next hour, we've got Noah Feldman's coming. He's a constitutional professor, and he's a writer, and he's also one of the people who drafted the interim constitution for the Iraqi government, and he's going to talk to us about the future of that, right?
Yeah, he's going to talk to us about what the Iraqis can be looking forward to as they draft the constitution that replaces the one that he wrote. And we got a lot more for you when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Aaron, it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, doo-doo heads. Good morning, doo-doo heads. Yeah, good morning, poopy heads. Remember, it's no name-calling week this week if you're in junior high. Why not make it nationwide? Try not to call people names, all right, dummies? I mean, I'm sorry. All right, good. Now, it's a good policy, Riley, and we've been talking about it. Here's a couple other things that you can do. If you want to oppose the anti-gay rights amendment and the elimination of the filibuster, go to the links page at morningsedition.com for petitions you can sign. To join the Morning Sedition Book Club, we got Sam Lipsight coming back on Friday to talk about Homeland. Talking about name-calling, the lead character's nickname is Teabag. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to learn more about where he got that nickname, this is a genius book. It's a hilarious book. It's beautifully written. And if you're a fan of Catcher in the Rye, or you're a fan of Joseph Heller or Stanley Elkin or Barry Hanna or any of these cats that used to write the great dark comedy satire of the 70s, Sam's your man. You can get Homeland at a discount on the Morning Sedition website. Here's a little taste.
We didn't have squash at Eastern Valley. We didn't have tennis either, unless you count that trick with the steel hairbrush and the catgut racket, whereby the butt skin of the weak was flayed.
What's that about? Get Homeland at morningsedition.com. Also, here we go. How about some Morning Sedition t-shirts? You want to get me and Riley on your chest?
Yeah, some swag,
how about
yo?
All of that?
Yeah.
I got to get my brother one of those. He was asking me about it.
Really?
That's morningsedition.com as well. Yeah, he's like, I sent him some Air America shirts. He calls me and he's like, no, man. I don't want Air America shirts. I want the one with you on it.
Uh-oh.
So I got to get him that. Anheuser-Busch. Here's a weird story. Anheuser-Busch is going to try to court young drinkers. By having beer mixed with caffeine, fruit flavoring, herbal guarana, and ginseng.
Really?
So it's sort of like a energy beer drink. It's, what is that? It's called the Budweiser Speedball.
Yeah.
What is that?
You can be drunk up at the same time?
Well, I mean, people do that with the Red Bull and the vodka. I guess it's the same effect. But it's funny, the sort of marketing
wow.
about that. It's like, beer that's good for you.
And they put fruit, some kind of fruit flavoring in it?
Yeah, but you know what? The British do the shandy thing with the lemonade.
Well,
the
they got even more. I went to a pub in England, and they have like rows and rows of these little sodas. I thought they were sodas.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's something mixed with some alcoholic beverage, yeah. and they market it specifically to kids, and it was why these people, these teenagers who came into the bar were like... I mean, really stinking drunk.
Yeah.
Before they even walked in the door.
Well, I had a problem with that a couple of years ago when they started marketing Barney beer Because I thought that was wrong, and I thought that they say, you know, don't you remember the Smurf cigarette campaign?
Yeah, I remember.
Those are the old days.
I drink you, you drink me. Yeah.
All right, well, let's get P.W. McDonald in here to talk about the Oscars, because I don't think they have any integrity whatsoever.
Was Barney nominated?
Of course he was. He's nominated every year for best, you know, silly dinosaur manipulator of children's minds thing. But, like I was talking about earlier, it's like I really used to look forward. I used to be a real film head when I was in junior high and high school. Me and my buddy Devin, we would sit around, we'd read film comment, we'd talk about foreign films. You know, I studied film in college. I was a film criticism minor. You know, it was all very important to me. Very important. And then I just stopped watching the Oscars. I don't remember, you know, at what point it happened, what movie won that made me say, oh, this is crap. But, you know, I do know that there's still part of me that gets sort of aggressive and sort of competitive around the Best Actor category. I don't have, every once in a while I'm surprised by the Best Picture, but I tend to think that the whole thing's just, you know, BS. And I heard you guys arguing about it yesterday. I guess we all argue about it, but what do you think? Do you think there's still any integrity? What does it mean?
Well, I think that that's just an almost irrelevant topic to throw in there about the integrity of the Oscars. I mean, this is an award to honor itself. You know, the award was created by Hollywood to honor Hollywood.
Right.
And, I was exactly where you are, Mark. You're just talking about stuff, and I, like, pictured myself doing the same thing, sitting around with film magazines and, you know, dissecting movies about, you know, deconstructing old films and where they came from and why, you know, current film wasn't there, and then the movies that were getting acknowledged as Best Picture, you're like, well, that's, you know, hackneyed. And you realize, though, that is true, but the Oscars are not a... It's not a qualitative thing. It's there to honor, so the industry can basically show off and say, you know, this is what we are presenting right now our product.
Right, these are our new products.
Right, and that even goes into the Best Actor, where you're like, well, you know, Jamie Foxx is pretty much a lock to win this year, and it will, you know, show the world what Hollywood considers to be its bright actors right now.
Right.
The shining point. That's why when you said yesterday, oh, Clint Eastwood, he's got a shot. I mean, let's be honest. How could they give an award to Clint Eastwood, especially when what he's really going to be honored for there is the actual picture? You know, he's going to definitely be competitive in the director category.
But, you know, this is a guy that's never won a Best Actor Oscar. I mean, he's been in 100-plus movies, probably.
The only way I can see it happening, and you get into it as a game because you start to try to predict the thought pattern of these people who are actually voting on these things and why, what would be the rationale for them deciding this is what we want to present. And, and I was saying that, you know, in terms of Jamie Foxx, they look at it as like, you know, well, we want a repeat of what he did at the Golden Globes. He gave that great speech and it brought, you know, had a teary-eyed resolution. So why don't we have that again at the Oscars? Let's vote him in and he'll be our guy to stand behind. The only way I can see him getting screwed out of that is if he's also nominated in the he is nominated in the supporting actor category and people might split votes on him. Say.
So on a lesser note, did you see that movie that he's nominated for the supporting?
Yes, Collateral.
Yeah,
I did.
You saw it too, Kayla?
Yeah.
How was it?
It's a pretty lousy B movie done by really great people. Michael Mann, I think, is a great director who can elevate that kind of material. I mean, it's really just if it had lesser actors and a lesser director and some not as interesting dialogue scenes, it would have been one of those things on at like late night HBO.
See, I still got to see a couple of the movies now. I'm sort of what's up, Kayla?
I'll definitely bring it in for you. I own it.
Oh, you have it? You have the DVD?
Yes, sir.
Because I don't have a VCR. I only have a DVD.
You don't like Cruise, though, man.
You know, it's weird. I'm kind of turning a corner a little bit. I'm ashamed.
It's the Last Samurai.
It was the Last Samurai. I hated the guy, and I've hated him for years, only because I thought that the only reason that he was ever rewarded, that his only real talent was his ability to focus. I mean, if you notice Cruise, you know, in any of the movies that he does the best in, he has some sort of toy. You know, whether it's like, you know, climbing up a rope or a sword, or it's some sort of weird thing that he can put all his energy, a wheelchair, anything that you know, he can focus on, you know, that he's rewarded for this intensity that he brings to his ability to focus, which I think is directly relatable to Scientology. But that's a whole other argument.
Well, but I think he's a great example of a guy who already was a golden boy, and there are movies that I think he's been wonderful in and deserved some recognition award-wise,
yeah,
and didn't get it,
yeah,
because I think that the people voting for these things say, you know, he already has a statue. He's the richest movie star in the world. That's his statue.
But is that really true? Is it really
sure?
Come on. You think it comes down to money with Hollywood?
It's not just money. It's just the status. The status of Tom Cruise.
Yeah, but they've given people that there are plenty of big box office draws, best actor.
A guy like Jack Nicholson who has gotten three of the things, but that's because every now and then they decide we need to honor Jack Nicholson as the vanguard of acting.
Just
people
being
need
alive.
To start. People
yeah.
need to follow that type of acting.
Is that really true? You think?
I would bet all my money on.
Even with character actors, though. I mean, your character actors like
well,
the supporting actors.
You get into that interesting category where every now and then you'll get a surprise there where you're like, well, what did that guy do before? And then you'll never hear of the actor again. He'll go on to not do anything, and that might just be them flexing their muscles. You know?
I've had to soften my parameters of criticism in some respects because you start to realize, like, you know, some people are just movie stars, and that's, you know, it took me. That was a big jump for me. Is like, not all this stuff has integrity. A lot of it's crap.
Right.
And it was always crap. Hollywood was always manufacturing crap.
Right. Well, and that's why I can embrace the Oscars on that premise that if they are just if we got crap out there, let's just acknowledge what's the best crap, you know? The Golden Globes, that's a different story.
And who sold that crap the best this
right.
year?
There you go.
Well, thanks, P.W. McDonald, Brendan, in the house talking about the Oscars. We're going to come back. We're going to have Noah Feldman talk about the Iraqi Constitution, the Iraqi elections. This is Noah Feldman is a Jewish law professor and a constitutional professor, a guy who knows stuff, who helped design the Iraqi Constitution.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and it's weird. It's not that he sells himself as that. He doesn't say, I'm a Jewish constitutional officer who makes myself available to, you know, Arab countries to make their constitution. We're just sort of putting that on him. But we'll have him on the phone after this. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Ask your doctor if Morning Sedition is right for you. Then listen anyway. Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
This
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Ramon brought us this. We're wearing a Condoleezza Rice wig earlier. This is Condoleezza's Palm Pilot for today, January 26. 6 a.m. Wake up. 1 hour on rowing machine. Must work off rage against boxer. Boxer! Boxer! 7 a.m. Excess tension remains. Damn you, boxer! Private time. No calls. 8 a.m. Tension gone. Long shower. 9 a.m. Dress for confirmation. Choose outfit that says humorless automaton, but with a naughty streak. 11 a.m. Show up late for hearing. They can wait for me today. 1 p.m., exchange withering glances with Barbara Boxer, then laugh to break unbearable sexual tension. Oh, Barbara. 3 p.m., after confirmation, call President Husband. Why do I keep saying that? 10 p.m., lights out. Private time. Oh, Barbara. All right, dude. There you go. How do you like that? How do you like that? On the phone. This guy has done some serious work. In 2003, he was the senior constitutional advisor to the Coalition Provisional Authority and worked with Iraqis in writing their constitution. His new book is What We Owe Iraq, War and the Ethics of Nation Building. He also wrote After Jihad, America and the Struggle for Islamic Democracy. He's the associate professor of law at New York University and presently a visiting professor at Harvard Law School. Good morning, Noah Feldman.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And how come you didn't come in today? We so like you coming in. What's the story?
You been outside, man?
Good answer.
All right. Point well taken. Yes, I have. I was outside at 3:30 this morning to come to work. But
you have the difference between us. You should become a professor.
I thought about it. Just did not have the discipline, my friend. So what's going to happen is is the election going to pan out to be a legitimate election? And if it does, you know, what do you see is happening in Iraq in terms of the Shias, in terms of what are the possibilities of a non-secular government? How does that play for democracy? There's many questions in there. What do you think?
You're going to see an election where people are totally split on whether it was legitimate or not.
Yes.
The Kurds, the Shia, the people who really want the election, which is probably at least 80% of the population, they're going to say, oh, this is fine. You know, it wasn't safe. There were bombings. But the people spoke.
Mm-hmm.
The Sunnis, the same ones who were supporting the insurgency one way or another and are not going to show up to vote either because they're scared or because they're boycotting, are going to say, this was a totally illegitimate election. We didn't get our voices expressed. And this is driving us to greater division. Then you're going to have a government that's dominated by the Shia, who are the ones who are a majority anyway, but also going to be the main people who vote. And they're going to be pretty cautious about setting up too religious a government. They've said that no mullah, no cleric, will serve in the cabinet. They're not going to go the Iranian route. They've seen it. They don't like it.
Right.
They know it doesn't work.
Now, we've talked to a couple of people. We talked to somebody in Baghdad yesterday that said Alawi is done. In what you see happening there, is that true?
You know, until the polls close, you won't know for sure, but that wouldn't be a surprising result to me because, frankly, his political list does not have the popularity on the ground, according to all the reports that I've seen, that the unified Shia list that's backed by Ayatollah Ali Sistani has. And if that's the case, his numbers will not be large enough to justify him becoming the prime minister. And there's plenty of non-clerics in that Sistani-backed party who would love the job of prime minister, who are going to step right up and apply for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Now, let me ask you, Norm Feldman, there's an article in Newsday, actually it was printed January 23rd by Tim Phelps, and he quotes a senior White House official as saying that a permanent constitution can be ratified in Iraq by October. Is that overly optimistic for you from where you sit?
You know, there are all kinds of ways to ratify a constitution. Let's say when the vote for ratification comes up, the same people who are going to boycott this election on Sunday boycott it again. And so it passes because a whole bunch of people who didn't like it just didn't show up to vote at all. If that happens, the White House can say we ratified the constitution, but it won't actually in practice mean that much because the insurgency will continue. So I've got no doubt we could ratify some piece of paper by October, but that doesn't mean anything. The real question is, can we have a constitution that actually reflects the desires of the people in the country, including the people who are presently taking up arms? And, you know, it sounds ridiculous to take account of their views because, after all, they're the people with the guns. But unfortunately, when you write a constitution, you've got to take account of the real power on the ground because otherwise it won't do the job of stopping the civil war, which is what it's got to do right now.
What do you make of the fact that there are some Sunni Muslim organizations inside Iraq who have called for a boycott of the elections but say they do want to play a very big role in drafting the Constitution? Aren't those two things at odds?
They are at odds. The first thing is that that's good news. At least the people who are saying they're going to stay out of the elections understand that the goal of the next step is primarily to get a constitution written that includes all of everybody's interests. So if those guys were saying they were going to boycott the constitutional process, believe it or not, I'd actually be more upset. On the other hand, they're really raising the bar for themselves, aren't they? Because these elections are supposed to choose the people to work on the constitution. So they're going to skip the elections, and they're going to show up and say, oh yeah, we want in anyway. Put me on the committee anyway. Give me the job anyway. And the Shia and the Kurds are not going to want to do that. They're going to resist it. But in the end, the fact that they know they need to bring the insurgency to a halt is going to push them to bring these guys in. They're going to have no choice but to bring these guys in.
So do you have, the constitution that you helped put together, is that still intact? Are you going to have any play in the new one?
Well, that document is still in place, and it is, technically speaking, the law in Iraq, and it will govern during the time that's running up to the final constitution. But there are some big question marks. One of the key provisions of that interim constitution is that it gives a rule for ratifying the final constitution. And it says that if two-thirds of the folks in three provinces, there are 18 provinces in Iraq, but if two-thirds of the folks in three provinces don't like the new constitution, it can't pass. They can veto it. Some of the Iraqis say, oh yeah, that's in there. Let's make sure we follow that. Others say, no way. That's not democratic. We don't agree to that proposition. So it remains to be seen what the newly elected bunch of people will do with that proposition. In terms of my role, you know, I'm still talking to the same people I was talking to all along. If some of them get elected and get involved in the process, I'd be glad to help them out. But if not, hey, it's their constitution. They don't need me to do it.
Okay, so we're going to talk to you a little more, Noah. When we come back, we're talking to Noah Feldman, and we're going to ask him some more questions about Iraq, like what's going to happen, what he thinks the future of Iraq holds.
Yeah, who's going to win the election?
Yeah, that's true. We got to ask him that, too.
When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. You're listening
morning.
To Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. On the phone is he was a senior constitutional advisor to the Coalition Provisional Authority and worked with Iraqis in writing their constitutions, Noah Feldman. He's a professor and an attorney, and also a associate professor at New York University and a visiting professor at Harvard Law School. Before we continue with you, Noah, we got to break some news here, Riley.
Yeah, there is a helicopter crash, a Marine Corps helicopter crash in western Iraq. It killed 31 people. It crashed near Ar-Rutba about 1:20 a.m. local time, which was 5:20 p.m. Tuesday, carrying personnel from the 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing and the 1st Marine Division. It is not known yet whether that crash was caused by enemy fire or whether it was simply some malfunction.
Mm-hmm.
But 31 people were killed. There were three car bombs within an hour killed 5 people and injured 6 others in a province in Iraq on Wednesday, and this is according to the police chief in Kirkuk.
Awful. So Noah Feldman, let me ask you this. What if a government is elected in Iraq that is a secular government, but really campaigning on anti-American ideas? What happens if they elect an anti-American government?
Let me answer just one question. I just wanted to say that, you know, I'm sorry to hear about that crash. This is characteristic of what happens to our guys over there who are really gutsy but are, to a certain extent, undermanned, and that's really it's a hard thing for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
If the election, if you get a government of people who really are anti-American, and frankly the Shia don't like us very much, what you're going to see is they're going to be in a very awkward relationship with us because they need us right now to protect them since they don't have their own army. We're basically the army of the Shia at this point, for better or worse. We're all against the Sunni insurgency together.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll be kind of stuck with us. Their trump card is to go to the Sunnis and say, we will cut a deal with you. You stop the insurgency, and we'll all get together and tell the U.S. to leave. Now, if that actually stops the insurgency, then it's good for everybody, because then we actually could leave, since our remaining is really primarily just to try to secure the country and create a situation where they'll stop shooting at each other.
Do you really think that's possible? I mean, even if they make an agreement, what are the chances of this unfolding into, you know, another sort of like perpetually, you know, unresolvable situation?
The truth is that there are some people in Iraq who would like to see that. Most of them are not Iraqis. Most of them are foreigners like Zarqawi, and they actually do want Iraq to become the new Afghanistan, you know, a venue for a global jihad. Last time they were fighting against the Soviets, they told them to fight against us. They figure they'll bring us down just like they say they brought down the evil empire. But the truth is that a lot of Iraqis, I think including still some of the Sunnis, realize that that kind of a long-term civil war scenario is just the worst possible thing for their own country. And what we're going to see after the election, it's going to be very interesting, is that there's going to be debate within the Sunni group about whether they should keep up the civil war in the hopes of kicking us out and dominating the Shia, or whether they should cut a deal with some kind of a condition like American withdrawal. So there's no way to guarantee what the result's going to be, but you're going to see a serious disagreement over it. And the radicals are going to keep off with the bombing because they really do want to see the whole thing collapse into civil war. I still think we have a possibility of getting out without something like that happening, without kind of permanent disaster for the Iraqi people. But the key is we have got to actually realize that we made this mess. We are the ones who made this mess. The Iraqis did not ask us to invade. We came in. And so we're responsible for keeping the peace, which we're not doing a very good job of, but we need to do until they can put together an arrangement that works for themselves.
Noah, is it realistic to push for a timetable for American withdrawal from Iraq?
It is, but not to specify that timetable publicly. And the reason for that, I think, basically, is that if you announce a timetable, that's another way of saying to the insurgents, hold on until this date, And when this date happens, you can take on the Sunnis. The Sunnis can take on the Shia head on, and they might beat them in a civil war. And that's exactly what we don't want to have. We want to hold out the fact of our withdrawal as a guaranteed security to the people who don't want a civil war. And then when they cut a deal with the Sunnis, if they're able to do that, then we say, okay, we're out by such and such a date.
Mm-hmm. No, what about the Kurds? Are they the X factor in all this? We don't hear a great deal about whether or not they have a slate of candidates in the upcoming election or whether they are looking at themselves as a semi-autonomous nation state. What do you see happening in terms of how they will respond, how the Kurds will respond to the results of this election?
Kurds are going to be really powerful in the new government because although there are two big political parties in Kurdistan, they organize themselves into one coalition for the purpose of this election. So almost every Kurd will show up to vote. Almost every Kurd will vote for the same coalition party. And those Kurds will have a large representation, especially because their turnout will be higher than anybody else's. Almost every Kurd would like to be totally independent. But their leadership has said to them, don't be the ones to break Iraq into parts. Wait for the rest of the Iraqis to break into parts and then take advantage of it. Don't get the Americans mad. That's the name of the game for them. Don't make us mad. And they know right now if they become a destabilizing factor, will get mad at them. So what they're basically going to do, their leadership is basically going to do, is play along, try to get the best constitution they can get for themselves, which basically means de facto autonomy. More or less, they run their own lives the way they've been doing it. And if the rest of the country falls apart, then they walk.
Now, there will be no backwash about reports that some Kurdish militia are being trained by the Israelis?
You're always going to hear stuff like that in the Middle East, and sometimes it's even going to turn out to be true. The Kurds,
you don't think it's true?
I said the Kurds have been very clear that they will look for help wherever they can get it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, wherever you can get it means something specific in the Middle East.
Yeah.
So, these kinds of things, it's not impossible that such things could happen. Will there be backlash against that? Sure, there will be backlash, but the truth is that many Arab Iraqis already don't much care for the Kurds. There's already a lot of tension between Arabs and Kurds. In a place like Mosul, where the insurgency has basically moved, they basically moved out of Fallujah and moved to Mosul, most of the Iraqi forces in the town are, in fact, Kurdish, which has definitely led to tension between the Kurdish National Guard troops and the local Sunni Arabs. So this is something this is a flashpoint we've got to look out for, especially because you've got to remember, it's always all about the oil in the Middle East. And there's oil right on the Kirkuk border, right between Kurdistan and the Sunni Arab areas. Neither side can make it in the long run without that oil. They're both going to be keeping a very close eye on it.
So, Noah Feldman, is democracy possible there, honestly?
I think it is possible, but at this point it's hard to say that it's probable. You know, we're going to get something like an election. Again, some of the people will participate, some won't. Then we'll get a constitutional negotiation. Again, some will participate, some won't. It's not going to be anything like a perfect democracy, but it will be some kind of a rudimentary democracy. And then that rudimentary democracy will have a shot.
And we'll
year from now, we'll know whether it worked or not.
Will it be an inspiration to other parts of the region, do you think?
I'm afraid it won't be, because people are going to look at it and they're going to say, man, democracy is pretty unstable. Democracy seems to mean that there's bombs going off all the time. I'm not sure we want a piece of that.
Hmm.
On the other hand, what they are going to see is a freely elected government of Islamic Democrats who say they care about Islam and they care about democracy. And it is going to be the first time we've ever seen that happening in a free election, despite all the other problems. And some people in the Middle East are going to say, man, that's not so bad after all.
Uh-huh. And who do you think is going to win?
I think we're going to see a substantial victory by the Shia alliance that's uh-huh. backed by Ayatollah Sistani. I think they're going to get a big plurality, and I would not even be surprised, just too surprised, if they actually got a clear majority in the election.
Well, Noah Feldman, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to talk to you. Maybe next time you come in if the weather's not too bad.
You betcha. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Mark.
All right, you take care, Noah.
Take it easy. That's wild. And when we come back, we're going to have the War on Brains and also some Iraqi campaign slogans. It's 42 past the hour on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition.
We are the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
Who says I don't like Sabbath? Who says? Huh? 46 past the hour, we're going to land this thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. If you've been listening to the entire show for all 3 hours, we apologize to Mick Ware didn't come. Hopefully we'll get him later this week. to reflect on the elections. But, man, the crap is hitting the fan in Iraq in the last couple of days, and I'm sure he's out there covering stuff. Right now, every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Morton Milfington.
Dateline, Washington, D.C., home of the National Archives and the world's largest repository of Abraham Lincoln facial mole replicas. This week, haggard defenders of complex thought were once again roused from the misty cloud of Morpheus by a sound of colossal siege mounds being constructed outside their gates. As it was recorded in Book 12 of the Histories by Herodotus, Longinus II besieged Chrysopolis for 73 days before the use of Greek fire allowed his troops to enter the city. Although victorious, the Etruscans lost almost 30,000 men in the effort. Meanwhile, Licinus fled the field of battle and retreated into the city of Byzantium. Mommy, I need a milk. Ah, sorry. Been moonlighting over at the History Channel. Amazing how things blend together when you don't sleep for 5 days straight, eh, Mark?
Yeah.
Anyway, last week you learned how the Bush monarchy plans to allow huge amounts of rocket fuel seep into our drinking water. Now, according to NASA, it appears most of that will come from the Hubble Space Telescope when it plummets to Earth faster than Paul Sorvino slipping on a Belgian endive.
What?
Why, you might ask? Because the White House just eliminated the necessary funds to keep the monolithic phallic symbol in orbit. This after the National Academy of Sciences, or NASP, called on NASA to, quote, reinstate a shuttle mission to refurbish the Hubble and keep the monolithic phallic symbol in orbit, end quote. While I suppose we can always use the money we save to build more prisons, because once Americans find out their only source of information for the liquid methane content of one of Saturn's moons is gone, there's going to be rioting in the streets, my friend! That a country would stop funding civilization's greatest tool of interstellar exploration? Shameful. That it would instead let this marvel of technology orbit Earth for years while being ripped apart by supersonic Russian space poop? Ignominious. That NASA, when the time comes, can't at least drop the stupid thing on my neighbor's rec room? My greatest torment. Keep your damn cat out of my nest, Churchums, Enrique. I'm not kidding this time. Yes, over $2 billion of forsaken NASA equipment, wet dreams of oil fields on Mars, and sending America's smelly hobos to the moon are the ingredients of George W. Bush's space program, his Xanadu. But the true reality is, no amount of governmental disinterest and discovery can ever dampen the spirits of this great nation. For the real legacy of the Hubble telescope is that by looking to the heavens, it helps us all look inward and learn more about ourselves.
Huh.
Which is why I'm stockpiling water and canned goods. I just put an ad out on nerve.com. I've got the necessary supplies, ladies. You do the math. Until next time, stargazers. Wear some goggles, or you might get an eye full of warm belch, if you know what I mean. Warm borscht, that's what I meant to say. Man, I need some sleep. In the meantime, this has been Sam Waterston for the History Channel's Time Lab 2005. Now today's dispatch from
The War on Brains.
Today's War on Brains was brought to you by Utz Potato Chips. All natural, crisp. Utz means flavor.
Well, what are you doing? What are you just putting plugs in just out of nowhere? You put a plug in, they pay you, you get an extra money from the Utz company?
I'm not allowed to make any comment on that.
What day is it? How long was that thing you just did?
Wasn't that about maybe 15 minutes or something?
Wasn't as long as that last set you did at your last gig, fella.
Oh, hitting below the belt. Now we are.
5 days long, I think it was.
Dragging people out. There's a stampede worse than a Who concert and that thing. In the wrong direction.
That's how popular I am. Hey, why don't you do what this guy did? Why don't you just rent out your forehead for ad space? Oh, it's potato chips. Why don't you do that?
Well, you have a receding hairline.
No, I don't.
There's ample space allowed for that kind of thing.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, thanks for being here, Mort. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, yes.
Yeah.
See ya.
Whatever.
Okay.
Marin.
What?
I got something to talk
about. Okay. Right.
Real briefly. This
go ahead. I'm going to rent my forehead out.
Yesterday.
$37,000, Riley.
$37,000?
What kind of idiot does that?
I don't know what kind of idiot does that.
What
but
a personality-less fool.
Someone who made history died yesterday.
Oh.
Guy by the name of Judge William Augustus Boodle.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Macon, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
He died in Macon. He died at the age of 102.
Wow.
Now, what makes him significant? In January 1961, 44 years ago, he ordered two students, Hamilton Holmes Jr. and Charlene Hunter, who's now known as Charlene Hunter Gault, who was the CNN bureau chief in Johannesburg, South Africa, ordered them admitted to the University of Georgia, reversing 160 years of segregation at that school.
Wow.
They burned him in effigy. He did a whole bunch of, I mean, they just went off. Lester Maddox was one of the people who reacted very badly to Judge Boodle's desegregationist ways. He ordered the Bibb Transit Company to integrate seating on its buses. This is in Georgia. Ordered several middle Georgia counties to restore the names of black people removed from the voter rolls. And when he was asked, this is when he turned 100, just 2 years ago, whether it was difficult to do this, he says, quote, "Someone asked me the other day, wasn't it hard to make the decision to let blacks in? I said it wasn't hard at all. Once you decide what's right, the making of it is easy. Right is right."
Wow.
If we only had a few people in Washington these days who could distill what they do down to that essence.
Well, to have that sense of personal morality and public morality that's founded in what is right and just and appropriate and constitutional in this country, and not to be a careerist,
yeah.
Good luck finding one of them now.
Yeah, I mean, this is just like a man's extraordinary life. I mean, when you have somebody that goes against their entire racial culture and history, as he did,
mm-hmm.
This is a white man who sat up and said, you know what, I am going to do my bit to include blacks in the life of the state of Georgia, which was where he was a judge for all those years.
Sure.
So I just wanted to mark the fact that Judge William Augustus Boodle died yesterday at the age of 102. Life well lived.
Had a good run.
Yeah, an extraordinary run.
My buddy Sam Lipsight's grandfather just passed away, I'm sorry to say, at 100. 100.
Wow, 100.
Imagine if you make it to 100, you know, what... Well, you know, where else do you go from there? Pretty soon, at that point, you're just sort of like, I can get one more day. One more, I can get it. I can do it. But 102.
102
years
old.
What a tremendous legacy that he left. I didn't know about him until you just told me about him right now.
Well, it's funny. I had seen an item about him briefly, and I had to dig it up. But that's why we have computers here in our studio.
That's what you do.
Yep.
The legacy that this guy is going to leave is one of a moron. This guy who put Andrew Fisher, 20 of Omaha, put his forehead for sale on eBay's advertising space. That's what I was referring to. But listen to this, Riley. $37,375, okay, to advertise a snoring remedy. Look at this picture of this doofus. Look at his stupid horn-rimmed glasses like Joey Hipster. Now, how is he going to ironically detach from the fact that he let this dumb company stamp this on his forehead? How's he going to say this is closer?
It's my forehead,
this.
Man.
No, but I mean, I look forward to an enjoyable association with Andrew, the man who clearly has a head for business and everything for work. That's what Snorstop, the CEO of Snorstop, said. All
wow.
Right? And, but, you know, like, are people this vapid? Is it really come down to that, like that thing I used to say about how the great philosophical question used to be, what is the meaning of life? Now I think is, how am I being used? And am I okay with that?
Yeah, that's all it is. It's really about, you know, let's make a little money. Remember, boxers have got casinos tattooed on their backs, half of them.
Do they do?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, you mean on the robe? Not actually
tattooed. No, on their backs.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Like it says Caesar's Palace tattooed on the guy's
back?
There's
a specific casino that actually has used a bunch of different boxers who were fighting on television, and they had the name of I forgot the name of the casino.
They're temporary tattoos, not real
ones. I assume they're temporary.
All right.
Let's hope they're temporary.
I was going to say, that's quite a bit of commitment.
Yeah, it is.
People are shameless. I mean, come on. Granted, I did a Sprint commercial, but, you know, it was just for a second. That was funny. All right, here we go. Who carries your liberal agenda for the day from the Streisand comedy? One, warned Senate Democrats that if they continue their belligerent tone, they're in real danger of defining themselves. Two, urged Senate Democrats to hold up confirmation of Condi Rice until they can find a qualified black woman. 3, complain that touchscreen voting machines will ruin the Iraqi elections. 4, criticize Oscar voters for not giving Fahrenheit 9/11 a nomination. Finding Neverland? Are you serious? 5, today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. Oh, hey, hate to bring you down with world events, man. I know you're really busy trying to sell your movie at Sundance this week, but wake up, sheeple. Robert Redford ain't going to save you. You dig? That's right, man. I'm going to get Sprint tattooed right here on my face. Right on my cheek, right here under my eye, Riley.
Hey, man, be careful. Have all a good right. one tomorrow. We talk Pentagon with Lawrence Korb. Have a good day, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi.